Hi, I'm Simon Connor from Top Tennis Training, and you're listening to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to episode 19 of the Functional Tennis Podcast. Big shout out to our new sponsors, Head. This week, we speak to Simon Connor of Top Tennis Training. If you don't know Top Tennis Training, you've definitely seen one of their videos. They've been producing videos now for 8 years. They're all over YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. They've worked with great players such as David Ferrer, Niall Bandian, and many more. They provide coaching courses for players all over the world. They're definitely the top three tennis online tennis training platforms in the world. So it was great to speak to Simon, where Simon tells us all about how he got into it and how he runs it all. Before I get started, I just want to say we had some technical issues this week, so it may sound a little bit different. I did an upgrade to my Mac, went to the latest software, but the software I use to record the podcast did not like that. So with some last minute changes, but all went smoothly, and really excited for you to listen to this podcast. Now let's hear Simon's story. Hi, Simon. Welcome to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on board. I know you from, I know of you from when before I started Functional Tennis, because
okay.
Top Tennis Training, your online teaching platform and all your videos
yes.
have been going since when?
So the first video I ever uploaded to Top Tennis Training was 2011. So it's been a long time. They've really kicked on from about 2013, and then they've grown slowly over time.
They've really kicked off lately. As
yeah, they've started to really snowball. Yes.
Even your Instagram accounts after snowballing. I think
yeah,
really big. I looked at it, I was like, is this real? But no, it was really good. And then I looked at your content. It's great content. There's a lot of
thank you very comment. Much.
There's a lot of people commenting, and they're genuine comments as well. So
yes.
it's yeah. a lot of...
It's all organic.
Yeah.
Nothing, haven't bought any followers.
No, I know.
I know that some guys have, but...
Yeah,
you can, organic.
It's clear to see. Everybody picks up a bit of crap along the way. Like,
I think
it's just normal. It's very interacting. Account. And tell me,
I
have this here. Love Tennis, is that you as well?
Love Tennis is our second channel. So Top Tennis is the main one. I'll get into why we started Love Tennis if you want to as well, because we had a lot of issues with uploading footage, pro footage, even the footage that we had filmed ourselves. So we had back in 2011 when I started Top Tennis, the first 2 or 3 years, I would go to every event that I could go to. So I went to Monte Carlo 3 or 4 years in a row. We also went to Indian Wells in 2015. I had traveled to Queens, Wimbledon, and then, of course, the ATP Finals. So I had this massive amount of footage. And we were uploading it slowly on Top Tennis Training, but then we started getting all these notifications that we couldn't use the footage. And so we put it away kind of for about 5 or 6 years. And then Love Tennis, kind of domain lovetennis.com, it opened up and we purchased it, I think, in 2016 or 2015. And we've left it there. We kind of said, let's focus on Top Tennis Training. And then eventually we'll focus on Love Tennis and help that to grow. So that's why Love Tennis is separate from Top Tennis Training. But Top Tennis Training is the coaching platform. And Love Tennis is more like a hub for everything tennis.
Yeah, I've come across, I've used your videos quite a bit recently. I think they're great
Perfect.
Videos. All the online tutors are using your videos now as well.
Yeah.
Like they're all doing
I mean, we've spent so many hours filming all those footage. It was kind of being wasted and we couldn't use it on Top Tennis Training. So we thought, you know what, let's use it on a different platform and let's grow that as a separate kind of entity. And Top Tennis Training has just been the coaching side of things, and Love Tennis has kind of been gossip, tennis news, updates about players, and then the footage.
Yeah, it's good. I see, like, you're quite popular on Facebook. You have a great Facebook account, the Love Tennis one. I know I didn't have this in my notes, but the whole ATP tour over copyright issue is such a pain.
It's a big issue. From my point of view, I'm a big MMA fan. So in the UFC, I know that a lot of the UFC content is also copyrighted, and a lot of counts have been shut down. I know that in tennis, the ATP are very strong on players or on the coaches using that footage, especially if you're going to use it without coaching in the background. So from my point of view, if you're growing tennis, it doesn't matter what you're doing in tennis. If you're growing tennis and you're getting tennis to a wider audience, what's the issue with a few guys online using some clips here and there. From my point of view, the ATP, they should be actually happy that there's so many platforms out there growing tennis together, because they want to almost control the whole monopoly of the online kind of community, the tennis community. And actually, a lot of the things that they're doing now on the ATP, Instagram, Facebook, we've been doing it for years, like compilations and all this stuff. And now they've caught on to how big that is, and they realize that that's where the views are. So they've started doing it themselves.
I'd see the ATP Tour as a competitor of mine a little bit, like, but I can't compete with them.
100%.
They've the best content. You will never be able to compete with them. And I
mean, of course, they have. Yeah, they have access to everything.
Like, let's be honest, functional tennis as a platform for shown videos doesn't make money. It's not like YouTube where we can monetize the views. I can pay money to go to Monte Carlo. They don't give free tickets, so you pay money. And you want to just record some clips from my own personal and audience and my audience.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, we find ourselves, we were shut down for a week. Account gone, just gone. You've been there, and there's so many accounts have gone, and they just do it for the love of tennis. It's not for making money. You're just trying to grow your account, and it's
not
YouTube.
You don't make money off Instagram.
No.
Facebook, social media, you don't make money off. No. If you're uploading on YouTube, you can make some money off ads, but it's minimal.
Yeah. Tennis doesn't have the million. The odd Federer video may do well, but
it's not enough. It's not like football or one of the other sports where the views are massive. It's a shame. Like the ATP, hopefully the ATP slowly will realize the value in places like functional tennis, love tennis, top tennis training. All of these platforms, they're actually helping more players improve and also grow the audience.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of my pet hates is, why can all these players, they can repost all the clips without any problems?
I know.
So
yes.
I'm like, well, X top 50 or top 100, top 200, he can repost and nothing happens. But Joe Soap here reposted and
you haven't got a chance. Yeah.
So I think that's unfair. It's either same rules for everybody.
That's the same. We've had issues in the past where some of our main competitors, they've been allowed to use footage. We've actually been in touch with the ATP and they couldn't give us a reason why. And we've never got to the bottom of it. So I think they have almost like a monopoly of who's allowed to post what.
Yeah.
So it's unfair. It's really unfair.
Well, I don't know much about that now, but I do know they have like a copyright company, for those who don't know. It's not the actual ATP Tour. It's a company in India that looks after, that monitors hashtags, that monitors everything. And yeah, they see it and they just flag it to Instagram. So it's not ATP.
It's incredible.
It's a company. So there's no relationship there with anybody. And yeah, they just see you just like anybody else.
There's quite a few of those companies that flag, especially on YouTube, they flag videos for specific soundtracks. And it's not actually linked to the actual company, because when you go against it and you say, actually, this is my content and this song is freely available, it's royalty free, you actually get it back. You get it back, allowed to re-upload it. So a lot of these companies, they're actually pretending to be linked to certain organizations, but they have no affiliation whatsoever.
Well, I didn't know that.
I don't
do much on YouTube, but I do know from here. Sometimes you can't. We have fought them and won. The early days, we would have looked a lot of YouTube, ATP Tour videos, but now if you look at our account, we do have a little agreement that we can do one every couple of weeks.
It's minimal.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
It's a shame.
It is a shame. And it's put a lot of people who've put a lot of work into various other accounts. And they've been shut down. And then some guys come on to me. I see them put up videos. And I got to say, you've got to be careful there. You're going to get shut down.
Yeah.
I'm sure they go a week or two or three. And eventually I get a message.
And then eventually,
my account's gone. Help me get it back. I'm like, I helped you.
Too late.
Two months ago.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get into... Just briefly touch on tennis. What's your experience in tennis as a tennis player?
So I started tennis when I was 4 years old. My dad got me into tennis and I played until I was nine. So I played 5 years pretty much every day, trained every day. My dad was really extreme with me. When I was nine, I lived in America for about 2 years and I was playing a lot of like under 12s, under 14 events there. And I won the nationals of Michigan. That's the state I was based in. So I won under 12s when I was nine. And then something happened with my dad's visa. So we got kind of kicked out of America. I moved back to Scotland, which is where I'm from. I was born there. And I didn't play for 5 years. So I didn't play until I was 14. And then when I was 14, I started playing again. I moved to London to live with my dad. And I played ever since, pretty much every day. But from 14 till 16, 17, I'd done a lot of catching up. So a lot of the guys who, when I was nine years old, I was kind of the same level or a lot better than them, they had gone miles ahead of me. So I had a lot of catching up to do. And then when I was 18, I started competing on the Futures Tour. So I played every now and then, whenever I could afford to go, Spain, France, Bulgaria, I'd travel and play. So I'd done that for about 2.5 years. And then when I was 21, couldn't afford it anymore, pretty much. It was just too much for me. I had some family issues as well. So my dad was my main kind of backer, my supporter. He was paying for me to go to these events. And he lost his job. So we were kind of in a bad situation. At the time, I was like, there's no way I'm coaching. I don't want to coach. Because for me, always coaching had meant that I'd failed. And actually, when I stopped playing, I was at quite a good level. I was beating players, like ATP ranked players. I was doing quite well in British tours as well, getting to like quarterfinals, things like this. And when I stopped, one of the girls who I used to train with, she said to me, would you train me? Like, she was ill for about 2 years. And she asked me, would you coach me for like a couple of hours a day? And at the start, I was like, let's do it. So I started working with her, and actually I realized that I really enjoyed it. I had all this knowledge that, because between 14 and 21, I never had a coach. So my dad would help me. He would help me to train. But the hours that I kind of learned were watching clips on VHS, the old tapes. So I'd watch Agassi, Sampras. They were my kind of heroes. I'd spend my nights just watching them, like analyzing their technique, breaking down everything, like serve, forehand, the volleys. So I had all this knowledge that I had gained while playing. And I thought, you know what? This is actually a good way for me to use it. So I started coaching at 21, worked with a few players, small group of players. And then at 22, the club where I was kind of coaching, they offered me a full-time position. They said, would you like to coach here? And I took them up. I started coaching full-time when I was 22. And I'd done that for 10 years. So I'd done, 10 years of a lot of hours on grafting. Like the first two or three years, I was working 7 days a week. So I was doing 7 days a week. And a lot of the players I was coaching, they were performance players. So like top juniors, spending a lot of time with good players. So I was training insane amount of hours myself. And when I was 24, I lost that kind of, I didn't compete for 3 years, but I started wanting to get the itch to actually play some matches. So I played for about 3 or 4 months. I played every couple of weeks an event. I actually qualified for some futures during that time and beat some like players who were 700, 800 ATP. And my club came to me one day, and it was the week of the qualifying for Queen's Club. And I said to my manager, look, I've been playing all these events. I'm feeling in good shape. Yeah. I was training a lot, even between my lessons. I was doing like, let's say I was on court for 10 hours coaching. I'd do another 3 or 4 hours training. So I was on court sometimes 14 hours a day. And I told my club, Queens is coming up really soon. Would you guys cover my Friday squad, right? So I had this squad on a Friday night so I can go and sign in. And the manager said, I'll speak to the main manager about it. They came back on the Friday and they said, look, you have to decide. Do you want your job or do you want to play tennis? So they gave me this kind of ultimatum. And they said, what is it? And at the time I was married. I had already married my wife. We married quite young. And I was paying the rent. She had a job, but it wasn't like doing that well. So I was kind of like the main guy making the money. So I said, look, I need my job. So I stopped competing. And that was the last kind of time I was competing properly. And then it was 2011 when I was doing all these hours on court and I was coaching a lot of these performance players. So I was hitting a lot of hours, probably hitting sometimes 7-8 hours of intensive hitting. And I got this virus. I got really sick. I had flu and I kept working through it. I was kind of a guy who, even if I was dying, I'd still go in and do my lessons, right? And I got this flu and it started getting worse. And then one morning I woke up. It was a Sunday morning. I woke up and I couldn't get out of bed. Like I couldn't leave my bed. Everything was spinning. The room was spinning. I had this like extreme vertigo. And I was also having these heart palpitations. And my wife was on the way to work. She worked in a big shop. And she said, look, I have to run. So she said, go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital. I managed to get a taxi to the hospital. when I got checked up, they put me on all these heart rate monitors and everything. And I thought I was dying. It was really, really intense. They came back and they said, look, your heart is in a bad condition because you've been working through the flu. And you also have an infection in your inner ear, which is basically this illness called labyrinthosis. And it's basically brought on by extreme stress. They said, look, you won't be able to work for a few weeks. And they were right. I couldn't leave my bed for a month. I was in bed for a whole month. Couldn't get out of bed. So during that month, I lost so many of my lessons because they had gone to other coaches for coaching. And also I was having pressure from my work. Are you going to come back? Like, what's the deal? And in that month, I made nothing. So I was like in a bit of a panic. And during that time, the only thing that I could do was lie on my left side. I couldn't lie on my right side, couldn't sit up. And I could only watch my laptop. So I was spending hours watching all these YouTube videos, like conspiracy figs. Like I went so deep into these holes.
Wow.
And then one day I came across Fuzzy Yellow Balls, Will Hamilton. And he was doing this video about, I think it was Agassi's forehand. And I was watching it. And Will's a nice guy. I've met him a couple of times over the years. We've been in touch. But I was watching it. I was thinking, wow, this guy's an online coach. And the more I looked into it, it was like a light bulb. It was like, wow, if these guys are doing this, I have so much knowledge I could share with people. And also in my club, I was finding the same common issues with a lot of players. So they were all doing the same mistakes. It was like five or six things that you could almost put each player into. So I started this online vlog, kind of like videos and also writing articles. And that was 2011.
What was it called?
That was Top Tennis Training.
Oh, wow.
But I knew nothing about URLs, domains. So I bought the domain toptennistraining.com, but I signed up with one of the worst companies. It's a company in America. And they screw you so badly on the fees and everything. So I was paying like £80 a month for my URL, my domain. And after a while, I lost it. So I ended up with toptennistraining.net, .org. I ended up with about 15 different domains. But slowly, I kind of learned how to set up the website, how to write articles, how to make videos. And since then, it's kind of been my passion. So between 2011 and 2018, I was coaching full-time. And I was also running the website. And that was kind of, so some days I was doing like 18 hours, like 5-6 hours on court in the morning, go home, edit videos for a few hours, go back, finish my lessons for the day, and then do a little bit extra in the evening. And I'd done that for 7 years. So it was like a big graft. But slowly over time, I was kind of paying for itself and then started making a bit of money on the side as well. But during that time, it was just my passion. I just wanted to help kind of more. The thing with coaching is it's limited. You can only coach one person at a time, right? So yeah. I can do my private lesson and I might help that player. But a lot of the players who have lessons, they come to the lesson, they take it in that hour, and then they head off and they forget it. And the next week you have to restart. So it's like every week you're almost going through the same routine. It doesn't matter how good a coach you are. You've always got these players who don't absorb it. So you're almost repeating yourself. At one point when I was coaching, I almost felt like buying a speaker and just putting a couple of recordings and saying, under the ball, brush the, like these kind of things. So the online thing allowed me to reach so many more people and actually really dedicated people, people who are so passionate about improving and so passionate about learning all this information. And these are the guys who are actually the best to teach because everything you say, they absorb it like a sponge.
You go, your major, obviously, first of all, Top Tennis Training is one of the, I don't know, top three biggest online tennis instruction platforms. I know we've Will's Fuzzy Yellow Tennis Balls.
He
goes after the plus 50s.
Yes.
It seems to be, I know a few American guys and they seem to go after the plus 50s.
They focus.
So they go after them. And then obviously there's Essential Tennis. They sort of go after, I feel Essential Tennis is more the recreational tennis player.
3.0 to 4.0, really. Yeah. That's their target.
They cover the and then that leaves you're going after the good tennis
more serious players.
The more serious players. And that's what drew me to Top Tennis Training. Obviously, you guys have worked with Nalbandian, Ferrer, like
Tommy Robredo.
Are you friends with I know you have a business partner, first of all.
Yes, so Alex
Sablinski, another, he's an ex-pro. He got to about...
He was 200, 280p.
Okay, so yeah. Where did he get involved in Top Tennis training?
So 2011, when I started it, I knew Alex from the Futures Tour. Like, he was always the guy who was doing well. At one side, I knew Alex. We'd say hello. We'd speak a little bit, but we didn't really know each other. But in 2014, when I was coaching like full-time and everything, Alex joined my club as a coach. And we were speaking one day. We were having lunch or whatever. And then he would see me on the court filming. And he said to me, what are you doing? Like, I said, I've got this online thing, but I'm trying to grow. I'd love to actually do some videos with you, because I knew that he was 200 ATP, but I also knew that he had just started coaching, I think, 2 or 3 years before, and he had gone through a lot of surgeries. So he was thinking about going back on the tour. He was kind of unsure about everything, and we were speaking, and he told me his story. So he was 280 at one point, and then he got this knee injury, and he had to have surgery. So then he went right off. He lost his world ranking. I think about 2 years he didn't compete. And then he climbed back up and he got to 260. And at 260, he got injured again, the other knee. He needed another knee surgery. I think he had really bad surgery. And then he had some personal issues that he went through. And he kind of lost that passion for tennis. But when he started coaching, he was like, you know what? I have so much knowledge to share. Same kind of feeling as myself. And when we started speaking, we were like, maybe we should do some videos together. So we've done a couple of videos. One of them was the forehand drills video where I'm feeding him and he's smashing forehand drive volleys. And people loved it. People like really kind of boomed online. And then we done a video of us hitting. People loved it. I said, man, why don't we do something together? Like, let's build something together. So from there, it's kind of started. That was where it really started kicking off. And Alex knows, he was playing on the tour for 10 years. So he knew so many of the players, including Nalbandian, Ferrer. Like, he's good friends with Ferrer. Ferrer has a brother who also played tennis. Okay. And one of his best friends is Alex's ex-coach, well, coach until he stopped playing. So he was the kind of connect between everything. Then he kind of knows everybody. Like, he's played so many guys. Even a lot of the guys who we see on TV now, he's beaten them, he's lost to them, he's been like three setters. So every time we watch tennis, it's like, oh, I played that guy in Kazakhstan 3 years ago. Yeah. It's crazy. So so that's how all those connections kind of came through. It was through Alex. He knew all the players. I knew some doubles guys who I used to train with, but doubles at the time, our focus was singles. We were like, let's focus on the singles players. So Ferrer was number three at the time when we filmed with him. And that was a massive, massive thing for us, because suddenly it wasn't just me and him on camera speaking about tactics. It was, okay, we've also got David Ferrer on camera sharing his knowledge. So that was very big for us.
From an online platform, it doesn't get much bigger than that. Like, the world number three, like, these guys have getting Dave Ferrer. That's pretty legit stuff. Like,
yeah.
Did you know we have over 170 great episodes with coaches, players, trainers, and experts working at the highest level of the game? Tap the subscribe button on your podcast app so you don't miss out on the latest episodes of the podcast. And to listen to our great back catalog of episodes with the biggest game changers in tennis, go to functionaltennispodcast.com.
So you're throwing out all these videos. You're obviously selling the course off the back of that.
Yes. We want to still help people who don't want to buy our courses. So we give out so much free content. I think we're one of the guys who gives out the most amount of free content. And this is across all the platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I know that some guys focus mainly on YouTube and they focus on that because they make the money from the ads. But we give it out on all the platforms. That's why our Instagram's big. Facebook's almost 100,000 subscribers. And it's because we keep pumping all the free content everywhere. The main thing is that we want to help tennis players. So even if you don't want to buy a course from us, you're still going to learn massive amount from us for free. And over time, it's almost like we're leaving a legacy in tennis, because in 15, 20 years, we don't know what's going to happen online. We have no idea about the future, but we're leaving kind of like a mark somewhere along that tennis kind of generation. Oh, we watched these guys' videos when we were 12 years old. Even Bianca Andreescu, the girl who won the US Open. When we released those David Ferrer videos, she left a comment under one of our videos. She was like, thank you so much for the videos. I love Ferrer. He's my favorite player.
So, yeah, and she's so only young. She's only a young girl.
She was 15 at the time. She was 15 at the time.
Yeah. I've watched the video, as I said, from before functional tennis. So I've known about tennis training. I've never bought any of your material. But I've seen plenty. I see your videos now every day, to be honest.
Yes.
Because they pop up everywhere and because I think they're good. So I've always seen them and the content's great. So yeah, there's a lot of, you're putting out some great content is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you very much.
But, yeah. And then if people, then if they want to take it one step further.
A lot of the people, they focus on the serve and the forehand. So we kind of focus on those courses, the tactics. So we basically, we go out, me and Alex will go out and we'll film for 3 or 4 days in a row. Just all day. We'll go from like 6:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock. And we'll have 100 different videos that we want to focus on. And we'll just break down like the forehand. So we break it down into, okay, let's talk about lag. How do we achieve lag? Is it natural? Drills that you can do to improve lag. So we'll focus on one area and we'll make all the videos, all the content that we can come up with around that topic. And we'll put it all together into a massive course. So those are what the courses are. So the free videos, it's like scratching the surface. Yeah. But once you get into the course, it's like, okay, these guys are going really deep into every element of that stroke.
What's the typical length of a course? Is the course based on 8 weeks or is it based on consume this 20 hours of material on your own time?
It's more they consume as they want. So they can go through video by video. We thought about the weekly thing. And I've gone through a few online courses myself where I've done that. And actually, if you're someone who like myself, I want to watch everything at once, just absorb it all. So a lot of the guys, they wanted to really grab all the information at once. So we've allowed them to kind of, as soon as they log in, they become a member, they log in, all the videos are there. They can watch them 100 times. They can do whatever they want with them. And that's how they consume that course. So in their own time.
Great. So I'm sure you've plenty of happy customers out there. Do you do one-to-one stuff? Do people contact you and say, look, I don't do one of your courses, but I like what you do. Can we work on my forehand? Is there time in your day to do that?
At the moment, not really. So our days are kind of gridlocked. Me and Alex, I left London this year and I live near Oxford now. And he lives on the very southwest side of London, like very close to the M25. So we're a few hours apart. So when we do meet, it's just to film. So we just film a couple of times a week. And then we both go home, edit the videos, upload them, put them in the right courses. And then all the free content's the other stuff. So we also focus on that. So our days are so filled with editing, uploading, tagging, all that stuff.
So when you're not filming or editing,
yes.
What, you're not in court anymore, like coaching.
No.
Are you marketing? Are you an internet marketeer now?
It's more the running of the website. So we've had so many issues with our website over the years. We've been kind of screwed over 3 times with companies, like legitimate companies. We've paid them a lot of money to build the kind of website that we want, the engine that we want. Each course is a separate entity. And we also have a recurring kind of monthly thing where the VIP members can choose what we film next. So this week we'll say, okay, we're filming forehand content. What do you struggle with? What would you like help with? And they'll tell us, and then we'll go out and film it. So it's a very complex kind of website to make and then to run. So the bulk of our time right now is editing, uploading, and then kind of fixing the bugs on the website, making sure everything's running, emailing the members, making sure everyone's happy, replying to customer service. So we do everything's in-house. It's just me and Alex. So we run everything ourselves. So that's where the time goes.
The time on the mundane tasks, I'm going to call them, like just to the cleaning up stuff where nearly, I think it could be worthwhile implying something to do, but then you're like, do they know exactly? You know, I think when you're stuck in the middle of it, you've learned so much. It's actually hard to teach that. And even you guys are pretty active on Instagram. I don't know about Facebook really because I don't hang around there too often. That takes up a lot of time and energy interacting with other accounts. And I find it draining. I run one account. I don't know. I know there's two of you guys, but you run like big. Your Instagram account's big. Your YouTube is massive. Like there's a lot of comments going on there. And that's a bit more, those comments are a bit more, they're even better because they're really into the video.
They're in depth.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's Facebook as well, which can be a bit like Instagram. How do you try not get sucked in too much there?
The thing is for me, like my day, my typical day is I wake up normally around 5 a.m. I go to the gym, work out for like an hour, hour and a half, just to keep in shape and just to kind of feel good about the rest of the day. And when I come home, the first thing I do is check the emails, make sure everyone's happy, reply to emails. And then I go on YouTube and I reply to every single comment. So unless it's a troll comment, of course. Yeah. But every comment that someone's asked me a question or anything, they've said, thanks for the video. I'd love to see this video. I always make sure I reply to every single comment. And that's actually helped us over time to grow, because people know they're speaking to us. They're actually speaking to Simon and Alex. Yeah. And then I'll focus on Instagram for a bit. I'll do the same there, reply to messages, make sure I upload in the morning. And during the day, there's probably, I break it up into kind of like social. So I'll go on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, write to the people. Then I'll go on the emails, make sure everyone's happy. And then I'll focus a bit on editing. So I'll do 2 or 3 hours of editing. And then I'll have a break like midday. And then I'll start again maybe at 2 or 3 o'clock. And I'll do another 5 hours. And in the evenings, I take my son. He's 6 years old. So I take him to martial arts. And I join in with him. So we do like 3 or 4 days a week training.
Nice.
And then the rest of the time is just editing. And in the evenings, I chill out with my children, relax. Nice.
And tell me, how many children do you have?
I have a boy and a girl. Little boy, he's 6. And the little girl is coming up to 2.
Oh, wow.
And so they take up my time.
it's great time, like spend time with your family.
It's best time.
Do you give them a tennis racket?
I gave my son one. And it's funny because my son, I said, I don't want him to play tennis. Like, I want him to play golf. Because golf, have you ever seen the interview with Andre Agassi's dad when he speaks about Agassi and he says, the only thing I would have changed is I would have put him in baseball or in golf because you can play for longer and you can make much more money.
True. So,
but for me, tennis was, because of the system, the way it's set up, it's so, so hard to actually make it. And when I was young and I was trying to make it, I realized this is, it's almost like climbing Mount Everest with nothing. You're coming up this mountain. You've got nothing to support you. Unless you're sponsored by the federation, if you're part of your country's federation or you have someone who's backing you financially, then it's a lot easier because you have the support. But if it's just yourself and you're kind of training like I was training on my own, so I had 3 or 4 training partners. I'd go to this club one day, the next day I'd go here, and then I'd travel. Everything was coming out of my own pocket. If I made $300 from the event, I lost $500 in that week. It was like almost soul destroying because I put so much effort into it and I got so little back from pro tennis because even though I reached quite a good level, it was nowhere near like top 100, top 200, like miles off. And all the effort I put in, I was like, you know what? I don't want my kids to go through that. But now my son, he really enjoys playing tennis. So now he's actually asking me, can you come and help? Like, can we go and play tennis? So I've kind of made it fun. I just keep it like really simple. Don't do too much technical. Do a lot of skills like ball catching, coordination work. And my little girl, she's only coming up to 2, but she'll pick up the racket. She'll see me on the videos. She'll watch she'll see me editing. She'll pick up the racket and bring it to me. She'll say, like, like, help me.
So nice.
I'm kind of, maybe she'll end up playing tennis. Who knows?
I'm looking forward. Yeah. I've mentioned it loads of times in this podcast now, but I have a new, he is 8 weeks today, exactly.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the top tennis training for kids under 2.
Awesome. Is that your first child?
Yeah, first child. So it's great. Yeah,
you're having those sleepless nights.
You know, actually, not so bad lately. Like, it's not so bad.
Okay.
It's interrupted sleep, but I can sleep through thunder, and my wife is great. So yeah, it's been really good.
That's always important. How your wife takes it. Yeah. How your partner takes it. Both my kids, they've been terrible sleepers. So we sleep during the day. We catch up during the day on naps.
Any opportunity. I also noticed that you guys were away last year. You got yourself a nice trip to Miami. Is it Miami or
Indian Wells?
Indian Wells, Indian Wells.
Yes.
Sorry, I always get mixed up between them two. And you're doing doing lessons over there. You had a camp over there.
Yes.
How did that come about?
This comes back to the private coaching. So a lot of people have requested like private in person. And to be honest, we'd have to charge quite a lot just to go to a place wherever it is and spend a few days with one player. I know that Essential, he does that. He has like private one-on-one coaching. The person comes in and they pay, I think it's about $8,000 for 2 days, which is insane. But there have been people who have asked and requested that we do in-person kind of camps. So at the club where I was working, they never really allowed me to take time off. So my holiday time, I'd take it with my family. I'd have a week off, whatever. But during term time, it was so strict for me to actually go away. And it was the same for Alex. He was working at a different club at that time. But we both had the same issue. So we always put it off, like, okay, we'll start next year, we'll do it next year. And we had this massive list of people who wanted in-person coaching. And eventually I was like, man, we have to just do this. Let's just get down, figure it out, and let's start doing it. These people, like, they really want in-person coaching. So we managed to get in touch with a club in Indian Wells. The guy was a fan. He had watched our videos. So he was like, look, we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you at the club. Come along and we'll book out the courts. And we've just taken it from there. We've done one in Indian Wells. That was the first year. This year was the first year. We've done one in Malta. So we've done that last year. And this year we had Spain, which was really good. And we also had, where else did we have? Oh, we've got Malta next month. Okay. So we have one next month in Malta. Yeah.
So you get a nice tennis holiday.
That's the thing. It's just people come, they spend the week training with us. So we kind of tried to make it tennis and fun. So the mornings are tennis. They come, they train with us for 3 or 4 hours. And then in the afternoon, they can kind of do as they want. They can go sightseeing or do some activities in the hotel, or they can spend time with us. So we'll go out to restaurants. We'll go out sightseeing ourselves. We'll take them on a tour. And so it becomes like almost like a family holiday, but tennis family. Yeah, a lot of people, they've loved it so far.
Maybe we should team up and do the functional tennis, top tennis, the FTTTT vacation in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think we have enough of an audience to give. It must be hard, though, catering for the right. I know you've got to understand your audience a little bit, but just catering for the right audience. I know you're not looking for massive numbers of people. It's only a select few.
Yeah, we keep it quite small. So we normally have between 6 and 8 players. And that's just because we want to focus on each player individually as much as possible during the week. But also those players who are willing to travel that kind of distance. Last year we had guys from Canada. We had one guy from LA, and they've flown all the way into Malta to train with us. So they're serious. We know that they're serious. We know that they're dedicated, and we know that they are passionate about improving. So it's so easy. So it's such a joy to teach those kind of people, because a lot of the players who I actually coached back in my club, there were kids who maybe they didn't really love the game. So they'd come to lessons. They said, oh, I want to be a professional player. But really, they didn't love the game. So you'd have a lesson with them. You'd have one good lesson, and the next one would be terrible. They're kind of like drifting off. They're throwing their rackets. They're having a little temper tantrum. But these guys, they're so dedicated to improving. It's such a joy to work with them. So it's been, so far it's been great, touch wood.
Great. Well, I'll definitely speak to you about that some other stage, but it'd be great to do a holiday. This podcast, this episode's been different, actually. We've video here. The first time I've done a podcast with video. And normally I'm looking at my notes, what I'm going to ask next. And podcasts really, look, it's new. They're always new to me. I was always afraid I'm going to run out of a question. So this is actually great, because you just get a natural conversation going. And I'm not looking at my notes. I'm not saying, what am I going to ask next? So it's been great. So now I'm just going to look at my notes and see. Actually, I think I've gone through most things that I've wanted to ask. Maybe there was like a touch on two things here, and we'll call it.
Yes.
On your website, I saw the RF logo. And it says you worked with Roger Federer. So nobody gets to work with Roger Federer unless you're a Nike or a Circle. How did you guys work with Roger Federer?
So 2015, we Queen's Club, we went down there to film. And Alex met a few of the guys he knew. And one of the guys was the Russian player, Eugenie.
Okay.
Yeah. And Eugenie was looking for a hitting partner for the day. Alex was like, sign me up. I'm done. So Alex trained with him. And then he trained with Leander Paes and the Canadian, Daniel Nesta. So he'd done 2 hours with Eugenie, then he'd done 2 hours with Paes and Nesta. So all these guys had saw him hitting, and they were like, oh, who's this? He wasn't the official hitter or anything. Yeah. He was just kind of like, Eugenie knew him, and he brought him in. And Wawrinka was there. Wawrinka was on the next court, and everyone was kind of speaking in a big circle. And Alex got introduced to Stan. They were speaking a bit. And from there, players knew that when they come to London, Alex was always available to hit.
Alex is the man.
Alex is the man. So what happened was it was coming closer to the World Tour Finals in November. And Alex calls me one day and says, man, I'm a hitter for next week. Like I've already got the Bryan brothers. So the Bryan brothers had spotted somehow. We had a video of Alex and Eugenie training, but word had got around that Alex was available to train. And some of the young guys that they bring in, even though they're good junior players, they might not have the same kind of tempo as a guy who's been 200. So they were like, perfect, let's bring Alex in. They spent, I think, 2 or 3 hours per day for like in the week leading up to the World Tour Finals training with Alex. And then one day we got a call and they were like, Roger needs a hit. He was like, sign me up.
Stop everything.
So stop everything. We had lessons the whole night. We had squads. It was such a pain to get out of all those like lessons and the squad. Alex almost lost his job for doing the hit.
It'd be worth losing your job.
It was insane. But we got on the court. Federer was a little bit late and Alex was a bit nervous. He was like, I'm not going to lie. I'm a bit nervous here. So we ended up hitting and I was dressed in jeans. So I always remember this image. I'm in jeans training Alex, like warming him up for Federer.
Wow.
And Federer strolls on the court and he looks at me and he's like, double take. He's like, what's going on here? I'm in my jeans. So I introduce myself. We start speaking. They have a great hit, like 2 hour session. Like Federer loved it. Edberg was there. Pierre Paganini, I believe that's how you pronounce it. He's the fitness coach. He was there. I spoke to him a bit. And what happened was at the end of the session, we ended up speaking. And for about an hour, Federer stayed on court with us, chatted to us. And he said, you guys look familiar. And he said, do you guys have online coaching?
Yeah.
So he knew our videos. He had watched some of the videos. And one of the videos was actually quite bad about it. It was Federer's backhand versus Wawrinka's backhand. Whose is better? Okay. And I had said, Wawrinka's is better.
So he remembers like, that.
I hope he didn't watch that part. But that's how that kind of whole thing came around. And from there, Alex has always kind of been one of the guys that the players know, okay, if you're in London, call up Alex, he might be around. And that's how that whole thing came around. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, that just shows how good Alex is. Good tempo, doesn't miss many balls. That's all they want, isn't it? Tempo and consistency.
The thing was, after that hit, more players started asking Alex. So then the next day we came back and we had Burdich. And then 2 days later, we had Nishikori. But we weren't allowed to film those sessions. We filmed like a little bit. We had some issues with filming. We had some issues with the footage. It's a long story. But the ATP, once again, they were kind of getting involved. Even though Federer allowed us to film, Edberg allowed us to film, they were like, guys, I'm happy for you to film. Don't film the whole session. Film a few minutes here and there. So that's what I done. I was with the camera. I was walking around filming on both sides. But with Burdich and Nishikori, we got told, you're not allowed to film this. So Alex played Nishikori, lost 6-4 to him in a set, played some really good tennis, and we had none of the footage. Nothing. From the practice courts at the O2 Arena.
Wow. It's just crazy.
Insane.
I have a video of a friend of mine, Sam Barry. I'm not sure if you know him. Ex-Irish pro. He's number one.
I think
he might have still been a junior under 18, but he's hitting with Rafa at the O2. Rafa's just mincing the ball.
Is that the one, the court level view right behind?
Yes, Rafa. That's the one.
I've watched that video many times. Yeah.
And Sam was only 18. Goes, oh, Rafa needs me over here to hit. Like, it was a great opportunity.
That was insane.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. When these players come to town, it's for junior players, it's insane. It's going to uplift you. It's going to motivate you massively.
Yeah, no, it is. That's great. So that's good. It's what an unbelievable opportunity.
Yeah.
And tell me, last question, Simon. Yes. What's the future plans for Top Tennis training?
World domination. No, I'm kidding. The future plans, we just want to keep what we've been doing, kind of growing everything, growing Facebook, Instagram, reaching more players, and just making sure that our videos, because there is a lot of stuff going on online. I don't know if you've felt it yourself with functional tennis, but now it's almost like the platforms want you to pay for them to promote your videos. So I know on Facebook, our reach used to be much, much bigger. Even though we only had maybe 50,000 followers, our videos used to go much more viral than they are right now because Facebook changed the way it operates. So they operate now, even if someone has liked your page and they want to see your content, it only goes out to about 25% of those people. So the videos that have actually gone viral now, a few years ago, they would have gone viral 5 times bigger.
Yeah.
So the main thing for us is just finding ways to actually reach the people who want to watch our videos, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and also building up that kind of base where players are coming on our holidays, buying our courses, supporting us that way, and just keep it going.
And tell me, I think to me this makes sense, but you may say never going to happen. Would you ever see like the Top Tennis Training Academy, a physical academy where
we have 10 courts? We thought about that.
Yeah, I think it's a
natural. We have looked into it.
I think it's a natural progression, but you may say, no, it's not. This is not what we are.
A few years down the line, it's definitely possible. It would all depend on the base. And we looked at it before. It's just, if we went into that path, that would take up all our time, like running an academy. Yeah. So that would be kind of like our focus. But it's definitely a possibility. Who knows? If people want it, we'll build it.
here's the advantage to camera. I can see the smirk on his face. No. I think it makes sense. But no, Simon, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this.
It was different
doing it on video. So the technical glitch made it better. Yeah, thank you very much. So
my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Hope you enjoyed listening to Simon's story. Fair play to him and Alex for building such a large community online. I know how much work goes into one social platform. Those guys are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. They have their email list, and plus they're building their online courses, which takes so much time. So fair play to them, and I wish them all the luck in the future. And yeah, that's it for this week. Really looking forward to next week. If you're new to the podcast, hit the subscribe button or recommend us to all your friends. Other than that, as usual, go out there and hit some big forehands. Until next week, bye.